This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, you might think about taking Jesus Christ as your savior instead of fooling around with all this stuff.
Ah, Jesus.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I like him very much. He no help.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
What the hell's going on out here?
Well, Nuke's scared because his eyelids are jammed in his old man's hair. We need a live rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
That's all we got? One damn hit?
You can't say damn.
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, YouTube.com/1080TheFan. Big, big day in the Sprague household today, guys. Massive announcement.
Oh, we got big news?
Yeah.
Big news out of
massive
the Sprague household?
News in the Sprague household today.
What is happening?
Pretty excited about it. I've changed my internet provider.
Hell yeah, brother.
Tired of being ripped off, scammed,
Yeah. Overcharged
in times I've never been overcharged before.
Yeah, all of a sudden my usage rate is getting tracked by my internet provider. And
weird, I cut the cable.
And all of a sudden that's a thing.
And now my internet.
You've used 90% of your data. I didn't know that I had a limit on how much internet that I could use every month.
I was told that I would never approach such territory.
No. Didn't know that
customer service.
They're still calling me to return unreturned equipment, and I've returned all of my equipment.
I had the same thing.
Just calling me like four times a week. Stop calling me.
Well, they want you back.
They want me back. And they're not going to get me back. They're going to lose me completely. And I'm going to follow your lead on this one.
You should. I'll let you know how it goes, yeah. But I'm getting new internet today. I'm pretty excited about it.
Hell yeah, brother.
We have a lot to get to in the second hour of the program. My beeves. Look, everybody, well, how come you know the Ducks barely beat this team? And you, yeah, I know. Well, my team isn't the Ducks.
No, different expectations.
When your team is the team, you start feeling a little emotionally different about things.
Yes, you do.
So we'll talk about the Beavs surviving Colorado State. We'll get into a little bit of the NFL today. College football had a minute. They had a moment, a weekend. Fascinating. Reese Davis had to do game day, and then he had to turn around and do the play-by-play for a 7:30
bonkers,
kick.
Man. I didn't even know it was him on the call for the first half of the game. He sounded so bad. Not that the call was bad, just his voice.
Yeah, his
I couldn't
voice
recognize
was shot.
Him.
Well, Lord knows when he had to get up to do game day
at least 3 a.m.
And that was the last, second to the last game of the night.
Yeah.
I asked
going
Fowler
till 11
this.
O'clock at night.
I met Fowler at Boise State when Oregon State went there. I was roaming the field randomly day before, and Fowler was on the bus, and he came off, and I didn't know he was there, and I got to meet Chris Fowler, and I remember asking him, what time do you wake up for the show? And he said, oh, man, it's unfortunate, but around 2:40 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap.
You got to get up. You got to get your makeup done. You got to get to wherever you're at to the campus and on site to host the
then
show.
Then you got to have a production meeting and make
production,
sure
go over everything.
Else. Yep.
Everything's dialed in.
Reese wasn't bad on the game, but like, unfortunately for him, he didn't have enough prep time because it was an emergency fill in. He got a lot of names wrong and numbers wrong.
Yeah,
and I'm like, well, this dude's been awake since 3 a.m. I'm cutting
his stuff. The fact that he was even able to call a game was miraculous.
I felt for him because I've been there, especially when the voice is shot and you're just. Yeah, you're straining.
You've hosted a three-hour national television show, and then I do play-by-play.
Yeah, early in the morning, late at night.
No, but he sounded like you sound at the LSI.
Exactly.
Game 7 of the LSI.
And that'll be a two-point shot for Liberty. Liberty is up. Can you believe it? I know I don't sound it, but I'm excited.
And I know. He had that last touchdown call of them winning the game, essentially. I know Cal had the last drive, but he didn't have a lot of energy in that call, and people were like, come on, man, that was a 25-point comeback. He's been up for 37 straight hours. Would you shut up over
guy
there?
Some slack.
God, man.
It's hard to put into words to people that don't do that job how incredibly difficult his day was.
Yes.
He must have slept like a rock on Sunday morning.
I hope he had a chartered private flight wherever he was going because he deserved a whole plane to himself. After Herbie's getting the plane for him and his dog, give one to Reese Davis, damn it.
Oregon played on Friday night.
Friday Night Lights.
kind of nice. Your team, I thought, let me see if I can find this. I should have brought this up during the break.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica Smetana works on the Dan Le Batard show, and she had a great tweet.
Yeah, about Cal hosting game day.
She said, if I can find this, I'm always curious how much people tweet, and now I'm, okay, here it is. College game day going to Cal unleashed some terrifying force into the atmosphere today. Nothing has been normal, and yet everything has been right.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly right. I think you thank your lucky stars. You don't always love your team playing on a Friday, or maybe you do. But Oregon avoiding the chaos of what Saturday was by playing Friday. They beat Michigan State 31-10.
Yeah, 31-10. I thought it was very similar to the UCLA game where it was a halftime. Woulda, coulda, shoulda been up by 30, but they completely dominated outside of one long completion on fourth down early in the game by the Spartans, and then they ended up fumbling on that possession. It was a game that easily could have been 35-7. I think you were okay with 21-0. It would be nice to not throw red zone interceptions anymore. And I know that will be a thing. Jordan James outgained Michigan State in the first half by himself. He had 155 yards. Michigan State had 102 total yards. And it just, you know, I'm glad you brought up that tweet about Cal, because I got buddies who text me about Oregon all the time, and we react to the games and how do you feel? And there was a little bit of internal panic. I think it's largely because who you're playing this weekend and the thought of you need to be perfect in order to beat Ohio State. And I don't disagree with that at all. I am sometimes too nitpicky on my own team. I wasn't going to be it this week, primarily because I asked for three things and they delivered on those three things. I wanted it to be an easy win, which the game was over at halftime. I wanted them to show that they could be dominant running the football, and they did that. And I wanted them to be elite up front defensively, because I think you need both of those things to have a chance this weekend. And they checked every box for me. But the other aspect of it is, look what happened on Saturday and the chaos that ensued. And it's funny thinking back to those first two games for Oregon, when everybody was hypercritical, myself included, about the way they played and eking out wins. And now you look back and you say, thank God you won the games, man, because you're clearly playing better football. I don't know what's going to happen this weekend, but you have found a different gear in certain aspects of your game. And a win is a win at this point in the season, especially a conference win. And so they dominated defensively. Michigan State didn't have a chance to score outside of the opening possession until Oregon pulled all their starters. And they did everything that I wanted to see them do. And now we get to find out how for real they are this weekend.
Let's hear from Dan Lanning in the post game of just beating Michigan State.
You know, our fans were absolutely awesome tonight. You know, I think anytime that you can, you know, play a physical game like that and control the rushing attack on both sides of the ball, it's going to create success. You know, clean relatively on special teams play, really good on third down. Still some moments there for growth. You know, in the red zone, we got to go come away with points. We got to go score. That didn't show up a couple times tonight, and it could hurt you later on in the season. So that's something we'll definitely attack moving forward this year. But overall, proud of our guys' performance and the growth.
He also talked about Dylan Gabriel. You mentioned red zone interceptions. He had another,
couple of them in this game. Yeah.
And he had one against UCLA. And so, you know, Lanning was asked about Gabriel throwing interceptions and if they talked at all about it.
We had a conversation, but that's a moment to reset. This guy's played a lot of snaps. You know, again, it's not easy to play college football, but timing's so important. You know, understanding where we're at on the field is so important. I think those will be great growth moments for Dylan.
I think this weekend, you sum it up, you talk about your buddies, and I think every fan of any school is always internally screaming, like, why aren't we perfect?
Yeah, you want it every weekend.
But, you know, Vandy lost to Georgia State, and then Bama lost to Vandy, and then Georgia lost to Bama.
Yeah.
So Georgia State's better than Georgia.
Yes,
let's get that
are.
Game on the schedule.
Yes, they are. The Kings of Georgia.
My point is, it's just this year, I'm excited for the 12-team playoff, but I'm more excited because I think the chaos is everywhere. If Iowa State ends up in the semifinals, I don't know if I'm going to be surprised. I don't know if there's a scenario where I'm really surprised by what happens in the playoffs, because we go into this year with, you know, the usual suspects that you tell yourself they're 20 points better than most. And what we're seeing so far this season is it's not really the case. Teams that have difficult, like BYU, I mentioned at the end of the first hour, has the toughest strength of record, the best strength of record.
5-0.
And they're 5-0, and nobody, BYU was picked to finish near the bottom of the Big 12 by many pundits. 5-0. Oklahoma State came in with all this big hype, this big talk. Oh, their whole offensive line is back, and Ollie Gordon, an experienced quarterback. They're embarrassing.
Terrible.
They're one of the like surprising, oh my God, look how bad they are stories. So to your point, we nitpick our teams, absolutely. But I think to your other point, you have Ohio State this week. And I'm going to do a little bit of a peekaboo on that. But I think the point is you won a game by 3 touchdowns. Gabriel wasn't perfect, but he hit some explosives. Holden had one of the best catches I've ever seen in my life from the ground.
He's laying on his backside.
Your ground game looked great. Yeah. Gabriel was largely untouched, and your defense completely shut down Michigan State. Not that they're an offensive juggernaut, but they completely shut them down. And you found another kicker.
And we made a 50-yard field goal.
How about that?
50-yarder. That deserves its own segment. There's no controversy. That guy should always kick.
Wow.
Oregon made a 50-yard field goal.
You've kicked Sappington
50
off the field.
50-yard field. Do you guys realize how big of a deal that was?
And it was a no-doubter.
No-doubter. Like, not a wall scraper. That thing cleared. That was out of the ballpark, man. I was blown away at that. They could have won the game by 3, and I would have said the night was successful because they made a 50-yarder. They outgained Michigan State in the first half, 363-102.
Yeah, it's like...
outrushed Michigan State in the first half, 192-21. So you throw a couple of red zone picks.
Not great.
It would have been 28 zip at the end of the first quarter if he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, you got to play it both ways. So Michigan State fumbled on the 2-yard line. So if you're going to say Oregon turning it over, it should have been 35-7 at the half if you're not turning the ball over inside the 10-yard line for either team, because you got to be fair to both sides of that. But I will say this on Gabriel. Of all the things that there could be a concern about going into Ohio State, I'm glad that it's him. Because he's one of the more trustworthy things on this team for me.
Glad that it's your
quarterback? Like I'm saying, like, what would be the bigger concern? Dylan Gabriel throwing a red zone pick or your offensive line not blocking great against Michigan State? Like, what's the bigger, it would massively be, okay, the offensive line, still a major issue.
Yes.
Dylan Gabriel went 2.5 years prior to last weekend without throwing a red zone interception.
And now he's back-to-back weeks.
And now
him,
he's got back-to-back weeks.
He's got three of them.
So maybe he comes out and throws 5 picks against Ohio State. I don't know, but he's also a guy that hasn't done this a lot in his career. So I think part of it's just forcing the ball and being a little tight. They didn't run the ball great inside the 10-yard line, so they didn't help him out a ton in that regard. Like, of the things that I could say, okay, can you clean that up from this week going to next week? Dylan Gabriel making bad decisions is something that's easier to clean up than, say, poor offensive line
play. Look, you definitely want your offensive line to block for your quarterback. My only retort to what you're saying is, like, if he's going to throw red zone interceptions against Ohio State, it's going to cost you the game.
Yeah, and what are the odds? Of course, if he throws 2 red zone picks, you're going to lose this game. I think the odds are saying...
I think that's my only point is back-to-back weeks now where he's had just... What are you doing there?
Yeah, not great decisions, man. The one at UCLA was the worst because there was nothing there. The one to Ferguson, the defender made a nice play kind of pulling off his guy, and he thought he had Ferguson open, and I think part of it is they're trying to force the ball to Ferguson in the end zone. Mm-hmm. And then the last one was just a ball that he threw a little too late and a little behind the wide receiver, and it was a nice play by the DB. But when you haven't done something for 2.5 years and then it randomly pops up, I'm not of the opinion this is going to be a trend and something that he does every single weekend.
A little bit more on that, and then we don't usually do this on a Monday for a game that's for this coming weekend, but I'm going to do it for this one.
Peekaboo!
We got a peekaboo in Ohio State. Let's get to that coming up next as well. Your thoughts are welcome on the Oregon Ducks, their performance so far this season. Interesting season for Oregon, who's undefeated, but getting ready for Ohio State to come to town. We'll get to Oregon State's double overtime win against Colorado State as well. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here with a little bit of a
peekaboo
of Ohio State. Oregon gets past Michigan State rather easily, 31-10. They win by 3 TDs, and you still get Duck fan crying on the text line or the text messages to Buddy. Oh, we're not perfect. We've got problems.
Somebody texted me a lot of sleepless nights for landing this week, and I was like, well, yeah, I mean, it's a big game, but I don't think he's not sleeping because of that performance.
Well, can we... let's just be honest here, because they're not going to admit this ever.
Yeah.
Doesn't it have a real feel? Because I've been following Ohio State. I've noted several times on this program, too many times to count, that team has also kind of been toying with their opponent.
7-0 at the half, if I'm not mistaken, against Iowa this weekend, and then they opened it up.
That's basically what all their games have been. It's like barely ahead at halftime. You're going, oh my God, what's going on? They look weird. They're not functioning at the level you think they are. And then they win comfortably. I kind of had a feel now, I had this going into last week's games, and I think I feel even more firm on it, that both of those teams, while they won't admit it, have been looking at this game on their schedule for a very long time. And it's not that they didn't properly prepare. Obviously, Oregon overlooked Idaho. We know that. Jainty is just ravaging college football. I mean,
the guy can't be stopped, man. He cannot be stopped.
He's got 1,000 yards already.
He didn't even play in the second half this weekend. Shame on Boise State, by the way, for not playing him in the second half.
Why?
Let him go for 400 yards and 17 tutties.
If he goes,
I want him to break every record, okay? He had like 190 in the first half and 3 tuds, and they pulled him.
If he stays healthy, they're going to the playoff.
Yeah, they will.
And he will be in New York.
Yeah.
And I would argue, even if they're not in the playoffs, he should still be in New York. The dude is unbelievable.
He should win the Heisman. Right now, he should be the front runner.
And then Oregon State, that was right opponent, I think right time. You guys had gotten your teeth kind of kicked in, tested. Oregon State has some weaknesses that kind of go well for what your strengths are. And then you beat UCLA, not really worrying about it. You beat Michigan State, not really worrying. I think Ohio State's done the same thing.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm fascinated by this week's matchup. These are two teams with a lot of expectation, a lot of hype. The number 2 and 3 teams in the new AP top 25 after everybody's lost. And so I actually think both programs, players, coaches, they won't admit it, but I think they've both been circling this on the calendar of, oh my God, I can't wait till we can get to that week in October to play each other. It's going to be a national game. I think it's really stupid, but I understand why NBC is running with this rivalry crap. This is not a rivalry. Get out of here with that. But they're going to sell it that way, and I totally get why.
Yeah.
But I actually think both teams have been playing as if they've been looking at this game for over 2 months.
Well, it's honestly a credit. I know the opponents were not great. Cade McNamara might be the worst quarterback I've ever seen play football. Like, that guy doesn't do anything good, and how he is a Division I quarterback blows my mind.
Did they score by him throwing a tud or running it in? He still hadn't thrown a tud all season until that
game.
Yeah,
they didn't get in the red zone. I know that. So the one touchdown that they had, I think, was a breakaway. I can't remember if it was a pass or throw, but he is awful, dude. Good. He is so bad at football. And Michigan State's not good either, but...
Nope, he didn't have a touchdown. No touchdown. Okay. Interception, though.
Yeah, he did. It was a horrible pick. I saw that.
700 yards.
It was a testament, though, to both of them not having the look-ahead spot. Like, if we know anything about college football, look-ahead spots are a big deal, and letdown spots are a big deal. Historically speaking, if you've been a fan long enough, like, the conversation this week about Oregon and Ohio State will be, is this the biggest game ever at Autzen Stadium? To which the answer is yes. But it will then lead to, what are some of the other big games? And I love that people are going to throw in 2003 against Michigan in there. Lightning strikes, Jason Fife on the cover of Sports Illustrated. An iconic win in the history of Oregon football. You know what happened to him the next week? Washington State came to town and beat him like 55-14. That is not a type, like 55-4, like they just obliterated them. So letdown spots and look-ahead spots are a thing, and it's a testament to both staffs.
Bama Vanderbilt.
Exactly, because I think you're spot on. I think both these teams have been trying to gear up and make sure they're firing on all cylinders for October 12th, and that's been their primary focus, and to not let their sights slip and drop a game before that when we have all these crazy upsets this year in the sport. Kudos to both of them for getting to this game undefeated.
Well, I think part of the reason I feel that way, and we talked about this a little bit last week, is with this expanded playoff now, margin of victory and style, none of that crap matters.
No.
You can argue it never really did.
No.
Because they were always going to get the teams in that they could get in. But my point is, when you have such an expanded playoff and the ability to win your conference and get in and then be an at-large, it's like... Lanning could have ran that score up on UCLA. Why do I care?
Why am I trying? Yeah.
We're up 28-10.
Yeah, game's over.
Game is over. We're up 31-7 on Michigan State.
It was 31-0. They pulled their entire starting defense, which I was glad that they did.
They should.
Get them out of there.
But this is a massive game for Dan Lanning. I know it's a big game for a lot. Dylan Gabriel's throwing red zone picks, and you're probably right. Blip on his larger resume. Ryan Day and
the pressure.
It's a massive
game for Ryan Day, too, man. It's a huge deal for both of them.
I agree, but to a certain extent, I think it's the biggest deal for Lanning.
They might want to fire Ryan Day if he loses this game.
Well,
they already want to fire him because he goes 11-1 every year and he can't win the one big game.
Okay, but he's going to beat Michigan this year.
Locally, yes, it's a bigger deal for Dan Lanning. But if they lose this game, Ohio State will not handle this well.
Oh, see, I think nationally it's Lanning, and I don't think it's particularly close.
Okay.
Ryan Day's beaten Michigan. Ryan Day's been in the playoff.
Ryan
Day is definitely on a hot seat of some sorts for Ohio State fan.
Yeah.
Dan Lanning's biggest win to date is Kyle Whittingham in Utah.
Yeah. Yeah, and UCLA and Chip Kelly a couple of years
that
ago.
That wasn't a good team. But so Utah, Kyle Whittingham is the best win for him, and he's 0-3 against Washington.
Yeah, I mean, he can't win big games, so they're going to lose this weekend. I can't wait to see it.
No, I'm not saying he can't win a big game. I just, to date, so far in his early tenure at Oregon.
He needs one of these.
Yes.
He definitely
absolutely
needs one of these under his belt,
absolutely,
which is why I think there's so much excitement for how it's going to go, what the reaction will be, the fallout either way. This is essentially your first playoff game of the year.
Yes,
if
it's a great,
you win
yes,
this game, yes, you're in the college football playoff. I have a hard time seeing whoever wins this game losing two more times. You would have a marquee win on your schedule. You would have the head-to-head advantage over Ohio State or Oregon, vice versa, depending on who wins.
Absolutely.
And the rest of their schedules, I know Ohio State's got Penn State in a couple of weeks. We'll see how they do this weekend in L.A. I imagine they should win that game. Michigan is terrible. They can't throw a forward pass. Wisconsin's not scaring anybody.
Oh, I think Penn State's going to lose.
That's they like, might, but I just, I have a hard time seeing either of the, whoever wins this game, I have a hard time seeing losing two times the rest of the year, and so you're essentially in, and maybe even a lock for the Big Ten championship game. And so this game is, yeah, it, for all, you know, for all you want to boil it down to, it's basically a playoff elimination game or invitation game for whoever wins
it. And I think you're so right on that, but I would also counter, it was interesting that there were two responses I saw this week in Dirt. One was Bama losing and Bama fan tweeting Spencer Hall, season's over, we're done, we're cooked. And I saw another one where it's like, the expanded playoff sucks because these losses don't matter anymore.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's somewhere in the middle, but I think largely the passion of the sport lends itself more to the Alabama opinion of, oh my God, our season's over.
Yeah.
If you lose this game, if Ohio State loses this game, I'm still picking probably both of them to make the playoff.
Yes, I will still like, I still like the loser of the game to make it, because I just look at the rest of the top 15 right now in the country, and it is utter chaos.
Well, the conference, too. I mean, Penn State, good. Michigan, feisty, but largely, like, Oregon goes to Wisconsin in November, right? Mid-November?
Early November.
Early November. Even if it's a little cold. I've seen Wisconsin play.
Yes.
So I don't think the Big Ten is particularly strong. I think it's very, very top-heavy. And so I think the loser of this game can still make the playoff. But to your point, it's an early, like, little playoff preview we're getting this weekend where we go, okay, Will Howard, how are you against a real big opponent on the road, hostile environment? Oregon, okay, you had some red zone turnovers, but largely you seem to have figured out your offensive line and your run game, and your defense has been stout. Here comes Ohio State and all the weapons, the receivers. I mean, my God, every year there's another receiver for Ohio State, and the defensive line is super experienced. So I'm with you. I think the playoff vibe of this game, even if it doesn't derail one of the team's seasons, it's absolutely going to have the energy of it.
Well, and the reaction to it either way will be big, right? Like, Lanning needs one of those big wins under his belt. I'll push back in a little bit on Ryan. Ryan Day is, I think, he is under a ton of pressure this year. And if they are to lose this game, Ohio State's, their heads will fall off. If he falls to 0-2 against Oregon and they lose this game, it doesn't mean anything for them the rest of the year. That's just the reality of the sport that we're living in. Oregon, by the way, goes to Wisconsin at the, November 16th. So it is towards the end of November.
All right.
And that's right before they play Washington near the end of the season. But it just, I think the biggest question I have is quarterback play, and how is it an advantage for Oregon in this game? Because I would have told you yes, and then Gabriel had the last two games that he's had, where it felt like in the Oregon State game and the first half of the UCLA game, he was playing at an elite level and basically not throwing incompletions, and now you have these weird clunky turnovers. But I have always felt like coming into this game, it's the biggest advantage that Oregon has. There's not a lot of them. I think they're very equal. Ohio State probably has the edge at a number of different positions. But quarterback, to me, is one that Oregon can have a massive advantage in. And primarily for me, it's because, one, I think Gabriel's better. But two, he has a ton of big game experience. This guy's been in a lot of different scenarios. One of the most memorable games of last season for me in the entire sport was Oklahoma and Texas, which is going to happen this weekend. And who was it with the ball in his hands with a minute to go who led a game-winning touchdown drive to be the only team in the regular season until Washington to beat Texas? It was Dylan Gabriel. So he's playing in a lot of these big environments, a lot of these big games. He has big wins under his belt. And so him bringing that experience to the table a little more so than a quarterback from Kansas State would, I'm hoping, is going to be an advantage. He just has to clean up the turnovers in the red zone.
Yeah, Will Howard, though, to his point, and what he did at Kansas State, I think that's the other part of this, too, is just, look, which one has the advantage? Gabriel's stats are slightly better. He's got a couple more 100-yard games.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's 200 yards more than Will Howard. Largely, it's 12 TDs to 3, 11 TDs to 3. So
yep.
It's interesting The advantage, is there an advantage in coaching, and is there an advantage at quarterback going into this game? And I think if you did that, you couldn't do this poll question locally because everybody's going to vote for the Oregon Duck. But I wonder if you threw it nationally, if you did like a Paul Feinbaum college football poll question, who is the better coach, Lanning or Day? Who is the better quarterback, Howard or Gabriel? I'd be fascinated to see those results.
Yeah, because they're very similar coaches. Ryan Day's been a coach much longer than Dan Lanning, a head coach at least. But they're very similar because they have the same label. It's guys that are elite, doing a great job with their program, but what are they missing? They're missing the one thing that matters the most, the statement win. And I know Ryan Day...
See, I think Day's had a couple of those, though, and that's I think that's the difference. I'm not
saying
he's not
under pressure.
Then
you lose three straight years to
Michigan. Okay, but he's beaten Michigan. He's been in a playoff.
He has.
Lanning hasn't done any of that.
No, he has not.
So I think that's there's a slight advantage in terms of like what you've done on your resume today.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's Lanning.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But I'll be curious to see how both fan bases handle the win or loss this weekend. It's going to be fun.
I can already feel the energy from you. I think you are antsy in your pantsy for this one.
I can't wait, man. I can't wait for Saturday.
Are you going to be okay staying in Eugene for this one?
Probably not. It's not good for my mental health, but I'm going to do it anyways, damn it.
Let's get to the Beavs. Double overtime. The Beavs survive. Mighty Colorado State. We'll talk about it next on The Fan.
All right, let's get to your Beavs. Saturday evening, they're playing at home against Colorado State. A game where in the first quarter you think, oh, God, this is not good. This doesn't look pretty. And then they resettle, and they take a lead into halftime. And then early in the fourth quarter, it's a 21-10 lead, and you're feeling like Oregon State's getting ready to pull away from this thing.
Oh, I did not have that feel.
Oh, okay, I did. And then here comes Colorado State with 14 unanswered points to take the lead before Oregon State is forced to go on a last-second drive, kick a game-tying 44-yard field goal with about 20 seconds to go in the game, and then we get chaos in overtime. So survive is the best way to describe this one. How are we feeling in the Monday aftermath of a 39-31 double overtime thriller?
4-1, baby.
Deep breath, deep breath.
I think that's all you can feel. There are things to nitpick about this, particularly Colorado State. I know Jay Norvell, their coach. I mean, my God, it felt like they had a million timeouts because every clock was dwindling to the final second because this quarterback for Colorado State was awful. But I just didn't think they'd come in and have a whole lot for you. This was a higher scoring game than I anticipated.
Much higher.
And even at 21-10, I certainly understand seeing it and going, okay, they're up 11 now. I still, in my head, I'm like, one quick score, and they're right back in this thing. And it got real uneasy, I think, in Reser Stadium. I wasn't there. I just know I've been in that stadium several times when you're losing or you're blowing a lead to a team that you should be winning and meeting maybe by double digits. It gets uncomfortable. And that's exactly what happened. You know, kudos to the defense stepping up big in double overtime. Hankerson is their best player. What he does on the ground, he can catch some passes out of the backfield occasionally. He led the drive, so like I want to give him the flowers, but Colorado State's pass defense is terrible.
Not very good.
And McCoy struggled to move the ball down the field a whole lot. Yeah, Clemens had two catches for 11 yards. That was
he didn't have one until the last drive, in that game-tying drive. Those were his only two catches. He might have one in overtime, but I know his first one came on that last drive.
Look, a win is a win is a win. To steal something from Howard Stern years ago, and you're 4-1, you have an opportunity to go 5-1 this week down at Nevada. I picked him to be 8-4 this year, and this is partly why. I'm not overly convinced that they're going to be the better teams on their schedule. I think if you were to evaluate what they've been so far, they're not better than Boise State.
No.
I can see John Mateer running all over them, and that's concerning. So keeping up with the Cougar offense. And San Jose State won this weekend, and UNLV lost in overtime.
They got screwed on a bad call.
They did, but they lost to Syracuse. They're still going to be a formidable opponent. So there's still a couple games on this that I don't think the Beavs are better than those opponents, and we'll see what they do this week on the road.
I think the tough part is, like, Purdue's not very good, and you handled Purdue, and it was a comfortable win. Colorado State's not a very good team.
No.
I think the question is kind of similar to what we were asking about Oregon early in the season of, is this who you're going to be all year, or is this a weird blip, or you just weren't ready, or for whatever, an injury happens, and that kind of shuffles things a little bit. if this is who they're going to be the rest of the year, and they're going to give up 180-ish yards on the ground, more than that if you don't count the sack totals, it was nearly 200 rushing yards for Colorado State. They gave up basically 5.5 yards per carry. That Morrow kid ran all over them. They had a really hard time bringing him down throughout. Like, if that's who you're going to be the rest of the year, when that is supposed to be one of the strengths of your team, sans a game against, like, Oregon, yeah, I'm not sure how the rest of the season's going to go. But I also think, and we talked about this on Friday, that sometimes coming out of byes, you get teams that are a little sleepy and they're hungover and they're just not quite firing on all cylinders. Sometimes you get the bye week and it's everybody's refreshed and we're locked in and ready to go. And sometimes it's the other way. I think this coming weekend will tell us a lot, because I don't know much about some of their opponents the rest of the way. I do know that Nevada's not a very good football team, and you're on the road against Nevada this weekend. So does the game look, I think they're a 6-point favorite early look ahead line at that one.
Yeah.
Is it the same thing where it's like Nevada's running the ball a ton, you're not throwing it efficiently at all, you're in a dogfight late, but you find a way to win it? Because I don't think that will inspire much confidence for the matchups that you're pointing to. UNLV the week after that, Boise State has the best running back in the country, Washington State in the way they played, Cal in the way that they played.
San Jose State, man.
San Jose State, like, I think you're then wondering how the rest, but if you come out and you look like you did against Purdue and that's a, you know, 38-17 win on the road at Nevada, I think you say, okay, that was a weird blip on the radar. We didn't play at our best, and thankfully we survived in a game in which we clearly were not playing at a high level and we had fluky turnover luck.
Well, they also, they got, look, I you shouldn't be in a position where you're putting yourself in it. The pass interference call
was horrible.
It was horrific.
Horrible.
Trent Bray turning bright red and throwing the headset. I was glad to see that. You still shouldn't, again, be in that position where you're blowing a 21-10 lead and losing at one point 24-21.
That's the tough part with tight games, man. One call go against you and it can sway the outcome of a game.
It absolutely can. And I credit to the coaching staff to a certain degree here. They may not have come out and played their perfect game, and they may have struggled and maybe not had the most confidence built up within the fan base. To keep your team, like, mentally engaged and to come out on top of that, like, you lost all the momentum in the second half of that game. And they stuck with it. They had the drive. Everett Hayes hitting a long field goal to tie. I was convinced in my head he was going to miss it. And it started a little left or right, I guess, his right of the field goal, but it kind of drawed back in. There was a moment there I'm like, oh, my God, they're not just going to not cover. They're going to lose this game outright. And they came back. And to your point, we'll see what they are against Nevada. But I'm also not entirely shocked. Again, I have them at 8-4. They could be 9-3. They win a couple of these games that we're throwing out there. But I don't think they were going to ever be 11-1. That was never realistic in my mind.
Yeah, the atmosphere was good. I'll give them credit for that. And I think part of it, too, and I don't want to speak for the entire fan base, but I think part of it, too, is just their scenario that they're in right now. There's a morale thing to not beating a Mountain West team. Like, that would be like, you already know your lot in life and it sucks and everybody can agree that you got hosed. And especially, did you guys see the crowd at Stanford this weekend? They played Virginia Tech at home.
What, 20
people? Was like 27 people there. It's an embarrassing
joke.
Shout
out the ACC there.
That team's in a Power Four conference. So I think there's part of that too, of winning this game, of like,
you don't want it to be real yet. I hear what you're saying.
Of like, you can't lose to Colorado State, man. This is like a conference game now.
That could
and you
have been
like
a bad loss.
Just for like your realization of where you're at. So winning these games is, like, Boise State's a different scenario later in the season because Genty is just not a human being. But Oregon State wins. They survive 39-31. Your final, they get Nevada this upcoming weekend.
You pummel Nevada, I think everything, you kind of breathe easy here. You had a game. You came off the bye. I was worried about the rust factor. And to your Oregon point, they barely beat Idaho and Boise State. So, like, you're not going to get clean every game and win it by 20.
No.
Thank God you didn't lose this one. This would have been a very bad loss.
Winning when you're not at your best is a good sign, and we'll see if that was hopefully the case for Oregon State going into Nevada next weekend. Let's take a look at the rest of the college football slate. Just bananas. Washington gets a win. We haven't even really talked about Tennessee yet in the way that they lost, not throwing a pass on the last play of the game. As we kind of wrap up our college football conversation, that's next on 1080 The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. We'll see if we can get into some NFL stuff in the final hour. We're a little jammed today.
Shaden Sharp?
Shaden Sharp got hurt again, so that's cool. Season's off to a rip-roaring start.
The amount of people that just like, yeah, we're going to tank, I'm like, this is the one player that I don't...
you need healthy to watch and see what you have.
Yeah. Joe highlighted that in the press conference.
Yeah, and complete season last year because everybody got hurt, and now we're hurt right out of the gate. Can we just trade Robert Williams before he ever steps on a basketball court again?
I've been on that opinion for a long time.
Like, just trade him. I don't care what. Just get a third-round pick. That don't even exist. I'll take a third-round pick at this point.
The idea that Portland was like, we need to showcase him. I'm always like, what?
What are we talking about?
No, you want to get him healthy, not play him, and then trade him because, he's going to have 10 games maybe.
Well, they claim a fake national title from the 1990s. Are the Huskies going to raise a banner after beating Michigan on Saturday night? Redemption game?
They are keeping track of playoff appearances.
They are. You got to chart that one. Well, Michigan did technically cheat last year, so now that you've won the rematch, does this mean half of a title? Are you up to one?
Look, I really am just glad, truly, that Jed Fish didn't blow the game. His clock management
was so bad
at the end of the first half.
So bad at the end of the half, man.
What are you doing?
What's going on here?
How?
I know.
It's crazy, though. Takeaway I had this weekend, I can probably sit in a film session with Jed Fish and McDermott in Buffalo, and they'd show me tape, and they'd say, what would you do here? And I'd say my best guess, and they'd laugh. They'd go, you're an idiot.
Right.
And then we'd do clock management drills, and I think I would win. And I can't believe I'm saying that because
I'm... Timeout. Call a timeout right there. Hey. Throw the ball. Throw the ball.
Multiple timeouts. Yeah. Run the ball. Run the ball. Make them use their timeouts. They're going to have 20 seconds left and have to go 40 yards. What are you doing?
They end up winning. They didn't do too many stupid things. They did throw a pick late that you kind of thought, wow, are they... I mean, this was an early Washington lead, and then Michigan kind of found their way back into it despite not being able to throw the football. They had to go to seventh-year senior Jack Tuttle. They benched Orgy. The Orgy was over in Seattle earlier. Early.
He was awful.
He was 3 of 7 for 15 yards, and they were like, you know what, maybe we should get this guy out of the game. He only had one run of 6 yards, or that was his longest run, I should say. They bring in Tuttle, and he hit at least 2 or 3 passes. He threw for 98 total yards.
But he gave you the threat. He made the
threat. At least there was the, like, maybe they could throw it, and he did have that one touchdown drive where he had a couple of nice completions, one of them on third down. Rodgers throws that pick, and you're like, oh my God, are they going to find a way to lose this game? And then Michigan hands the ball right back to him. They end up winning the game by 10 after another fumble from Michigan. And this was a big win for Jed Fish, man. That was as embarrassing and bad of a loss as you could suffer. They had no business losing to Rutgers a week ago. They outgained them by nearly 300 yards. Like, didn't turn the football over. You cannot lose that game. They did. Jed Fish desperately needed this one, despite some of the coaching problems that I think both of us have had with this game on Saturday.
Yeah.
Still a big one for momentum, just to get a win, albeit over a top 10 team, even though it's a top 10 team in name only.
Now, look, I know it's accepted, but still an underrated part of this, 2 penalties.
Yeah.
Like, that was a massive cut down for UW.
Yes, they didn't beat themselves.
They did not beat themselves.
And if they would have, they probably would have lost the game. If they would have had 8 or 9 penalties in that game, with how close and uncomfortable it was, they maybe lose that one.
I'll give Fish this, because we have crapped on Fish a few weeks now here in a row, and I think Husky fan feels largely how we're saying. Like, they agree with most of it, but also, he just beat a top 10 team at home, and everybody was questioning why they were favored in that game. They were 10 points better in it. I'll at least give them credit for this. Their kicker, Gross, one of their team captains, by the way. How often is the kicker a captain?
Yeah.
He's in a struggle bus right now.
On Saturday.
He's mentally locked up, and you could feel it. His field goal that got blocked at the end of that half, which kind of summed up, I thought, the clock management of it. Fish did not stray away from using him, and I give him a lot of credit for that. The mental part of sports is one that we don't largely talk about nearly enough. And I think what Fish did was pretty awesome. I don't agree with his clock management. I think you still look at some games and go, you've cost your team some games. You can make a real argument they should be undefeated, but your record is your record and the result is the result. How many people abandoned the kicker after that block kick? Because I know the Michigan defense got through a little bit, but that's on the kicker. That trajectory was really low. And that was a short kick. Him sticking with him, I thought, goes a long ways. And we'll see. Maybe Gross won't turn this around. But if he does, I think it's Jed Fish's credit of sticking with him and saying, no, we still need to kick field goals, and you're still one of my captains.
Yeah.
And I think it's incredibly easy in football to want to abandon the kicker at any moment that your kicker shows some shakiness. And Fish stuck with it, at least. It wasn't entirely the reason they won the game. Key turnovers defensively cost Michigan that game late, but him sticking with Gross despite how gross it's looked, that's a credit to Jed Fish. A win is a win, and beating Michigan anytime you can do that, it's key for your team.
It is, and now they get a reward of going on the road, 9 a.m. They get the big noon game at Iowa, so you get an early kick on the road. The travel schedule from on the road, Rutgers, home against Michigan in Seattle, and now you go 9 a.m. game at Iowa.
Bet the under in that game.
That is this Saturday. A big win, though, for Jed Fish and company. They outgained Michigan in that game 429-287.
Yeah.
So it was a massive advantage for them. Michigan hit a couple of plays early that kind of kept them around. The turnovers helped them a little bit at times. The one interception that they threw. But still, that was a game that Washington could win. They needed to stop beating themselves. And I think if you're a Husky fan, that at least is the thing that makes you feel good. And maybe this team's finally out of their own way, and then you can see the potential, because they have not lost games early in the season because of a lack of talent. And if I would have told you they were going to lose early, I think we all would have thought it's a lack of talent that will get them. That doesn't seem to be the case with them this season.
Well, so, if you go to Iowa, we'll see what you do against Iowa. McNamara can't throw the football.
It's the same team. You're playing the same team again.
It's going to be a 9-6 slugfest. Just can Will Rogers not turn the ball over in a key spot? Can Coleman have a breakaway run?
Can you avoid the hangover? It's easy to play this game. Big home crowd. Now you go on the road.
Well, here's also an underrated part. If you can win at Iowa, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
Mm-hmm.
They're at Indiana the next week.
Undefeated Indiana.
Indiana's offense is all the rage. Cignetti is one of the biggest stories of college football. Indiana's top five or top 25. They're undefeated. But Indiana's defense is trash.
Not very good.
Any and everybody is scoring on Indiana. Just Indiana's outscoring everybody. So if you can win at Iowa, you start to kind of play the schedule game a little bit. It's a real opportunity for 2 weeks in a row. And then you get USC coming to Seattle.
That doesn't look intimidating at all right now.
Before you go to Penn State. So you got a real... Fish has got an opportunity here to build on that win. It's just, do you shoot yourself in the foot?
Yep.
Can you win in a tough environment like Iowa that's going to be a defensive slugfest? And then you're going to Bloomington where, you know, that offense is one of the top offenses in college football.
A lot of road trips, but a big one for Jed Fish in Washington on Saturday night. I didn't get to the other final thoughts there. I will recap the final thoughts of the weekend in college football. Tennessee, throw the ball in the last play. What are you doing? How do we make sense of just the landscape of the sport, the craziness that we saw this weekend? One coach is everybody wants his head, and we'll tell you who that is and how they lost their game this weekend. Get to some NFL stuff in the final hour. It is loaded. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.